Hello? Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Welcome to Death of Funny Business.
It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy. That's me.
Natasha Spencer-Levy is on something else.
Again, had a coffee. See, Ben last week was like, why are you drinking something that you don't always drink before a show? And I was just like, well, here we go. Going to become a consistent problem.
I've had 4 coffees today.
Challenge accepted, Benjamin.
And I feel nada.
You have a problem.
I know. That's why we're here.
What do you mean you've had 4 coffees?
I've had 4 coffees today and I just...
You're doing
it
wrong. Can I tell you what it is? You're doing it wrong. I don't drink caffeine until a point where I'm like, I have to drink caffeine. And that's the thing. People drink caffeine every morning. They're like, I have to drink caffeine every morning. No. You're not that tired yet. You're like semi-tired. You're like, I don't have a coffee in the morning. I had a coffee at 2 because I was like, I need to stay awake for another 6 hours.
But I love the taste of coffee.
Yeah, it's delicious. Have a decaf. Don't choke. Becky's going to be sick. So today on the show, we have Carolyn Mayling, who is the author of award-winning book, The Future is Rosie. And it's all about her losing her daughter, who was 11 when she passed away. And we're going to talk to her about her book and also her charity, which is called Rosie's Rainbow Fund and has been founded in her memory, which brings music therapy to sick children in hospitals and support for their parents, which I think is really gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lovely chat. Becky, how are you doing apart from your 4 coffees?
I'm just really tired today.
Yeah, you are a bit sleepy.
I'm going to preface this by saying I'm tired.
So do you know what it is? It's hot.
It's really hot.
Really hot.
Really hot.
I have been at work today and I said to my colleague, I was like, I just need to crawl into a damp cave, like a cold, dark, slimy cave.
Air-conditioned studio.
Oh, air-conditioned studio. Yeah, we're actually quite chilly now, which is nice.
We're in the Death of Funny Business studio. Obviously, we have our own studio.
Death of Funny, but no, we're in FUBAR
studio.
yeah, it's nice and chilly in here. Yasmin's kept nice and cold.
She has. Oh, no, I'm actually good. There was obviously Father's Day on Sunday.
Yeah, how was that?
It was really funny because I wake up on Sunday morning with my boyfriend and I said to him, Happy Father's Day. Not, I know, you might go, Daddy. No, we don't do that shit.
No, that's...
It gets a bit dirty. It's not for this show.
Not for this show.
His dad died as well. So
shit.
That was my way of saying, Happy Father's Day.
You guys should just do something different. Like, you should change it up. You should make it like, I don't know, Becky and boyfriend's name here, because I don't want to say his name on air just in case he doesn't like that, like Pancake Day, like annual Pancake Day or
actually
something,
love that.
Or like Waffle Day instead of Father's Day.
Yeah,
so it's like, it's not about Father's Day, it's actually the day that you guys go and play frisbee in the park.
Well, he did meet his gran. It's his gran's birthday.
Oh, that's kind
of
cool.
So I guess that's kind of, you know,
that's
something
nice.
You know, just going out and having some Aperol.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that idea. I don't really know how I feel about Father's Day. I think
it's a bit of a weird one anyway. I find it a bit weird.
Capitalist day.
Yeah, I find that whole thing a bit weird. Like, we did Father's Day on Saturday for my dad. Yeah, it's a bit weird. I'm like, you know, and my dad can be a bit of a... He can be a bit of a grump. And I was like, I have to buy this man a book. And then he's going to kind of look at it and be like, And then, like, that's about it.
Was it a gardening book?
No, it was a Richard Ayoade comedy. Because my dad likes a good laugh in a book.
Yeah.
He reads a lot of, like, stupid, like, comedy people.
That sounds great.
No, it's good, yeah. But it doesn't always translate into our lives.
No.
I think he's having fun reading. But whether we're laughing, I don't know if that's
But
true.
I know what you mean, though. It's like, okay, we wake up in the morning and we go and give our parent something.
Because we feel forced
to. We feel like we have to. And
even like Mother's Day, I guess, for you, like,
Yeah, like it's,
I just find it a bit
it's
weird.
Nice because it's a reason to meet up and it's a reason to do something.
Yeah,
but
true.
I feel like we don't need that day to do that.
That's an interesting topic of conversation. Do you feel like because of your grief or because of your tiredness around grief, not your personal tiredness, but one's personal tiredness, and how exhausting it is, that organising events for non-specific special occasions is tricky? Or do you find that easy? Because I think for a long time, I was like really, I was really bad. Actually, like, funnily enough, only in the last, I think, year or so, have I started thinking, oh, like, I could just have everyone over and, like, hang out.
What, on Mother's Day?
No, not on Mother's Day, but just, like, in general. Like, I could go and see all my family. Like, we could just go and hang out. Like, because no, I think my family, like, because of Mum dying so early, maybe, because we were just so kind of, like, caught up in all of that, maybe it was, like, a thing where it just stopped happening because events felt so sad, I guess.
I'm the opposite.
You're the opposite. You like being around.
I like people. You were like, I like distractions. Let's get them all around. Less intense.
Mm.
Everyone's here. Have a chin.
But do you feel like you would like see your mum, like, other side of Mother's Day or something? You would. Yeah, you and Susie.
Yeah, super
you
close. I feel
Sweden
really lucky, really close to my mum. So it's, you know, I don't feel the need to have a day to celebrate her because I think
and yeah, you're always like about and around.
I'm doing stuff. But I just love people. I think when Dad died, I really craved community and I
craved
that sort of family togetherness. So even my dad's sort of like half/step family, we didn't really know them very well, but I was the one that reached out to them about the funeral. I was the one that wanted to keep contact and like stay connected with them because that felt like the final tie to him.
That's
he didn't have much family, and like blood family. So for me, it was really important to stick with those that were there and make the effort of meeting them every other month and like going having coffee with them, like going around for a barbecue. And I've been really good at that. And actually that's
something
that
you've been quite religious about it.
I'm actually really happy that I did do that.
No, that's so good.
Because it means like they're really, really happy that we've connected. So my dad's, this is really could be a boring story, but let's go ahead with it.
Do it.
My dad's mum had a half sister, and then she didn't know that she had a half sister.
Oh wow!
So then she and her half sister then had a kid, and so basically,
family
my
drama.
Dad found that kind of side of the family.
You have like a whole other. He has a whole like
whole other side of the
siblings.
Family. Yeah, but didn't know about that until about 6 years before he died.
So
they'd only really just kind of connected.
Oh, that's
so nice. So I felt like it was really important to me to then carry that on. And I think Dad would be happy that I did that because
no,
for him it was really important and
but
the family was really important.
Yeah, and your family are very social beings anyway.
Yeah, we always had
we've
parties.
We've talked about this before, but like it was always like, I remember
party house.
Literally party house. Like, I can't even begin. Like, we were in like literally year 5 or 6 or like...
Yeah.
And our dads got along because they both played the guitar.
Yeah.
And like... I just remember I have so many memories of like, because we were friendly, but it was weird. Like, because I remember thinking like, I am friends with Becky, but like, I'm not like, I wouldn't say like I would be there all the time. But then when our dads and me up, like we would spend like the whole evening.
Yeah, I think it's because
like, did you have a trampoline?
Yeah,
you did.
I had
have a trampoline.
Like
and a treehouse.
No,
you
else.
Did have a treehouse. You had something in a bush or something.
I had a shed.
Maybe. I don't know.
We could have just hung out the
I
shed.
Seem to remember some kind of extracurricular activity apart from the trampoline.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Isn't it funny, though, the idea of us having our own family and then going through all of that with our own kids and then knowing that, like, something's going to happen? Like,
what do you mean?
Let's just say we both like, have our own families.
So you're going to get dark here, is that what
you're
saying?
We're going to have our own families.
Yep.
We're going to invite our friends that have kids and blah, blah, blah. We're all out in our garden.
And then somebody dies.
And then suddenly something really tragic happens. And then we just have to redo it, relive grief all over again.
100%. But also, Rebecca, I'd like to remind you that grief is part of life.
I know.
And if we don't do all the nice things,
yeah, then what's the point?
Then what's the point? Like, if we just try and avoid grief our whole life by not getting close to people or having fun like that, then
yeah,
and making new connections and making new families, and then we just, we don't exist.
Mm. I really look forward to that part of my life. I'm really, really content now.
Yeah, but I'm excited for us to have babies.
Babies. I really,
I want a baby so bad. I mean, look, I don't want a baby. I just love kids. Like, yeah. I just loved a little baby, so I loved him so much.
I love them, so I had to give them back. But I love the idea of just having...
I babysit a lot, don't I? So, like...
Yeah. You see enough of them.
I see enough of them. Like, don't get me wrong, like sometimes it's tiring. But, like... I'm like, oh, I just want a little baby.
Just want a little baby. So cute. I think I just want, I want a bond, and I want to fix.
You want a family.
I want to fix what went wrong.
Let's not do that. Let's not do that. That's not how that works. Love you. Shall we expand on that a little?
You go on then.
Yeah, because like, you know how we talk about repeating patterns in like relationships and shit like that? Don't do that to your kid. Let's not try and fix our daddy issues with a child.
Yeah.
Who might not live up to that expectation.
But it might not be that. It might
I'm gonna just take that back a little bit.
Yeah, it might be more about excited. Not yes. needing, but excited by the prospect yeah. of having that fun love, family yeah. dynamic with friends.
100%.
And like yeah. playing football 100%. In the garden and yeah. like just drinking
well,
some pints.
When we have kids and we're coming over and we come over to your fancy house, because let's be real, you're the one that's going to have the actual home. Actually, I live in
a
home. I
don't know
what
the
fuck I'm talking about. They come over, we have a paddling pool, they can hang out in the paddling pool, we can drink Pimm's on the patio, the only alcoholic drink I will partake in, because it is nectar of the gods.
Oh, that is such nectar.
So good.
Pimm's is actually...
Like, I literally am sober 100% of the year
yeah.
until, well, she says that. I have a rum punch at Christmas because it's tradition. But pretty much don't drink
yeah.
until either the tennis or I'm out. I happen to catch myself outside in the summer in a beer garden.
Why don't you drink?
Good question. Because I'm a horrendously... self-destructive person on when I'm drunk. I had in my last year of uni, I had kind of like a mental health crisis.
Love how we just cannot take that seriously.
Have to laugh about it because it's funny now, kind of. But yeah, I had a massive mental health crisis. And then I realized after we did our like first... I went to drama school, so we did like our first show where I played a alcoholic who was 40 and then proceeded to kind of, I don't know, bring that into life and just was like absolutely trashed for like 8 weeks in a row. And I don't know how I really did it and didn't really tell anyone and was like drinking on my own and shit like that.
So you've sort of embodying... this character.
No. Like, it was just like after that, I was so stressed about this whole everything that was going on. There was a lot going on when I was in my third year, and on top of like kind of being forced to like play this very unhinged woman, and then leaving and being like, I'm still an unhinged woman, just different, and then being like, oh, it's so fun when I go and party and end up in a stranger's hotel room and have a bath.
That sounds fun.
I mean, it was fun. We didn't even fuck, like, genuinely. Like, this is actually such an interesting story, but I don't really normally go home with people, but I was like really fucked, and I just said, he was like, do you want to come back to my hotel? And I was like, I don't know. I don't really want to, like, fuck a stranger. And then, just personally, if that's your game, go ahead. And then I was like, do you have a bath? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, can I have a bath? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, alone? And he goes, yeah. And literally, this boy let me have a bath on my own. So drunk. Obviously, we were kissed, you know, whatever. But did not take advantage of me. Well done, sir.
Well, yeah, he shouldn't do that. Don't even congratulate him.
No,
for that.
Look, I don't mean it like that. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I didn't get taken advantage of. You know, good job.
How did you relax in the bath knowing that there was just this guy outside?
I just was so drunk, Becky. I was so, and I was also, yeah.
That's so funny. That is actually brilliant.
So drunk.
Bad so news. Since then, you've decided to be sober.
Yeah, I just...
I'm really interested in this because
Well, I'm not going to lie. Truth be told, I then went ahead and... Shall I just say it on air? Fuck it. Who gives a shit? I can't say that.
You can't.
No, I can't. It's really embarrassing.
Just doing it.
Nah, it's too late. I can't. I actually can't. Anyway, I basically just did something real bad. And I basically just like... I broke girl code... And kind of dated a girl's ex-boyfriend for quite a bit without telling her. And then...
Shit, like, you're going to actually get hate, like, hate
I'm going to get hate cry. Hate crime? No, that's not what I mean.
That's not what it is.
Hate comments. I was trying to say hate comments. But and then I just realised, like, I was smoking a lot of gardening equipment and also... drinking a lot, and then I was like making these really poor choices and feeling really bad about myself. And so the end of that like situation, I was like, so I'm never drinking again. I'm just gonna stay nice and centered.
But can you tell a difference in your personality and the way that you handle life in general now that you're not drinking?
Yeah, because I didn't just stop drinking. I stopped drinking. I put myself in therapy. I put myself first before trying to please everyone else or trying to not do things, you know, ignoring things that I actually want, not doing things that I wanted to do. Do you know I mean, like,
are you tempted to drink again or when you see alcohol?
I don't think that I have. Like, I've said this to friends like before, like I have had a drink since I stopped drinking, and like I've had a couple of nights out in the last, God, how long has it been? Since 2022. So 2022 till 25, it's like 3 years. So like I've had like one night where I've actually got like a bit tipsy, and my mates around me were like, are you sure? And I was like, nah, actually I'm in this scenario where I'm safe, there's no drama. I don't feel like I'm in like a place in my life where I feel really centered, I feel really like secure in myself, and actually I don't feel like if I drink my little button's gonna go off where I go, well, your life is a piece of shit, so you better do something fucking crazy to feel alive, you know?
Yeah, there's...
Like, that's what we do. Like, we get really drunk because we're trying to escape. And then drunk, by the way, my name spelt backwards is R, Satan. Okay? Natasha spelt backwards is R, Satan. Okay?
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, now. I know, right? So imagine... Satan is running around trying to kiss everyone, including people who are... you know, her friends and like people she's shitting where she's eating. Like,
we need to keep you off the booze. Yeah.
It's just, I'm already fucking nuts. Do we need to add a layer? No, I need calming down, not speeding up.
Yeah, we need to restrict your caffeine intake as well. So
I'm said a lot today.
I'm loving this a lot.
We don't have anything to talk about. Don't know what we're going to do. Sorry, this is Becky.
Also, this is not shit that we should voice live.
Why not?
We're Becky's keeping
like,
it real.
I'm stressed. I don't know what I'm going to say. And I'm like, it's literally fine. We do know what we're going to say.
I'm
going to talk about
stressed.
Our lives.
I'm tired.
Yeah. Oh, God. Here we go.
I'm fucking tired. I'm really tired.
You're okay. You're hot. That's what's really good.
I think I'm hot. I think the reason I asked you about the drinking is because I think I got really drunk the weekend.
When? Yeah, well, that
weekend.
But this is the Becky as well. I've not had a hangover in. Oh, do you know what does me in
now? I hangover
now?
Every weekend for the last 6 months.
Well, that's a problem, my friend. Can I tell you? I mean, it's not a problem until it's a problem. But no wonder. Like, honestly, if I go to bed past midnight, I feel like I'm hungover the next morning now. I've put my Karen voice on, haven't I? I've gone into that character where I'm like, oh, God.
We're leaving you.
Okay.
We're leaving you. We're going to a break and then we'll be back with Carolyn Malin,
so
the author of The Future is Rosie. See you in a minute.
Love you. Foo Bar Radio.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
I'm joined by Alex Mitten, retreat host and mentor.
I think a lot of people are lonely, surrounded by people at the minute. Like, you know, especially living in London, there's fucking people everywhere. But we sort of live these quite strange lives now where we're quite closed down emotionally, you know, even just like with our voice. We don't really speak that often sometimes, do you know what I mean?
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. I did. Right, okay, right, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I said I love you, and you were like, I love you too, and I was like, I love you, 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 I love you so much, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello, and we are back in the studio. And today we are talking to Carolyn Mayling, who is on Zoom with us right now. Carolyn, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, no, thank you so much for coming on. So we're here, obviously, to talk about grief and to talk about loss and your experience. And I'd quite like to just ask you if you feel comfortable just to tell us a bit about Rosie and what kind of child was she like and what made her special. Like, I think it's really important that we keep her memory alive. And I'd really love to know what she was like, if that's okay with you.
Thank you. Yeah, but I love talking about her, so it's absolutely fine. I'll literally talk about her to anybody at any time. So
incredible.
You know, in order to keep her alive. So, you know, in many ways. So Rosie was she was a very a lively, intelligent little girl. She was a pupil at our performing arts school, because we run Red Roof School for the Performing Arts. And she was a pupil there. She'd already done lots of TV and films and shows and so on. And she used to write musical shows as well. She was really musical. And so she spent her whole childhood really kind of like doing sort of theatrical pursuits. And and we had a theatre at the time, actually, and she used to put on shows in it. And she and her sister used to write musical shows all the time. So they were really prolific. So their childhood really wasn't kind of like playing like Monopoly or anything like that. It was very much creating all the time.
Oh, that's amazing. She's a girl after my own heart, because I'm musical theatre human. So that's so lovely just to hear that she was such a creative girl. Obviously, we are talking today because, unfortunately, she died when she was 11. And I we talk a lot about grief and losing our parents, but obviously losing a child is such a, it's a different beast. And I wondered if you could just talk us through kind of your experience with that and how it, it started to impact you and the initial reaction and everything.
Sure. Well, they, I mean, they say it's the every mother's worst nightmare, and absolutely. It absolutely is, or every parent's worst nightmare. So what happened was that Rosie was rehearsing Panto in, it was sort of Christmas season, and while she was rehearsing, she was actually playing the sidekick. She was in Puss in Boots, and it was the sidekick to the baddie, because she hated doing like ensemble ballet sort of parts, and she just loved all the little cameos, the fun roles. Yeah. And she was playing the sidekick to the baddie. And anyway, so she went down with a chest infection, or what we thought was a chest infection at the time, and we didn't really think too much of it. You know, when a child gets a sore chest, the last thing you think of is something sinister. Anyway, it really took hold, and she was on many antibiotics and saw lots of doctors, and all the doctors would go, maybe it's a chest infection, maybe it's pneumonia, maybe it's asthma, you know, and it was none of those things. And she got so ill that she had to come off the show, which she was gutted about. And it actually got to Christmas Eve, and she'd been off the show, and all her friends were in the show, and she was totally beside herself. And it was Christmas Eve, and she disappeared up to her bedroom. We had some friends round, and I said, "Where's Rosie?" And I went upstairs, found her in bed, and she said, "Mummy, I'm going to die of this." And I said, "Stop being such a drama queen. I mean, there is no way. Just stop it. You know, you're going to be fine. We'll get you sorted out." And she said, "No, I am going to die of this." Which, you know, I had a horrendous gut feeling at that point that something was really, really wrong. Anyway, we got through Christmas, and she was referred to a specialist. And I said to the, and the specialist also wasn't sorting her out. And I said to the specialist, "Look, you know, can you not do this? This, there was a particular scan. There's a friend of mine's son who was a doctor, said, you know, why are they not doing this scan?" And I said to this specialist, I said, "Can you please just do this scan? Because I feel like there's something really wrong." And she said, "You can't just go ordering scans, will you, Lily?" I said, "Look, please do it." And they did it reluctantly. And then within about 20 minutes of the scan results coming back, she came running back into the room, this lady, and she said, "We have to blue light her up to Oxford, to John Radcliffe. We've just found pulmonary embolism on the main arteries going into her heart, which is why she's having breathing problems, why she was coughing, and why she was so unwell." So from then, we were piled into an ambulance and blue lighted, and then we arrived in intensive care, and then literally our world just changed overnight. Yeah. It was the most horrendously scary place to be. And Rosie, I mean, she was very unwell, but all the time she was in there, she was saying, "There's nothing for the kids to do. I've, you know," she kind of exhausted all the toys that there were and books to read and all that, all of that. And anyway, eventually they diagnosed that she had vasculitis, which was an autoimmune disease, which affected the blood vessels. And we were in this hospital environment, and there was no support for parents like me at all. So I was very, very isolated. So my ex-husband, as he now is, was at home with my other daughter looking after her. And we were in hospital, she and I, stuck on this ward with a lot of children who had cancer. Yeah. So she was watching these little girls and boys with their hairs falling out. I mean, it was just horrendous. So I identified there was no support for me, but she also identified there was nothing for the kids to do either. And she said, you know, life in this hospital is really boring. There's nothing to do. And she said, "When I'm out of here, I'm going to put on money, but I'm going to raise money by putting on shows to make it better for the kids here." Sadly, she never got to do that, because she came home for a short time, and then she had a pulmonary hemorrhage while she was at home, was rushed back into hospital, and then she had a cardiac arrest, had 9 days on a ventilator, and tragically we had to turn the machine off.
Oh gosh, Karen.
So me and my husband and my daughter were kind of left in this situation where there was no one supporting us.
Absolutely.
We were sent off down the motorway, down the M40, with a pile of leaflets saying how to bury your child.
Yeah.
And came back to this situation where we just can't go on. What do we do? Mm. And the day after that, my husband had a heart attack.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we'd been in there for months on end, and just it was just too much. So he had a heart attack and spent the next couple of weeks in intensive care himself.
Oh my goodness!
They rushed him off, so we were left to kind of plan the funeral. I mean, you know, how do you plan the funeral of your child? You know, it was just the most devastating thing ever. Anyway, we got through to he came out of hospital. We got through the funeral, and on the afternoon of her funeral, I said to a friend of mine, I've got to do something whereby we create a legacy. We have to do something to honour our little girl, because she was so full of life and colour. And what I hadn't actually mentioned to you was that she loved coloured stripes. So everything about her was like, you know, she used to wear stripy tights. Everything was kind of rainbow colour. And as I said this to my friend, I said, we have to do something. And I looked up, and outside the theatre where this celebration of her life was happening, we saw this huge double rainbow. And I said, that's it. She's talking to me. She's saying it's Rosie's rainbow.
Mm.
And that was the beginning of what became a charity, which I founded in her honour. And which is now still running 21 years later.
Oh, Carolyn. Just want to say to start with, like, I'm so, so sorry for your loss. And, like, you honestly have turned so much grief into such a awesome thing with Rosie's Rainbow. And, yeah, I just wanted to say that before we go on and talk about the fund.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Rosie would have been horrified if I hadn't done something.
She'd be like, come on, we got to raise this money.
She sounded very mature for an 11-year-old, you know, like obviously
she was absolutely an old soul.
Yeah.
And she, things she used to come out with even when she was little, you know, where they used to astound everybody, really. And she used to kind of say things how they were, and she had no patience with fools, really. She didn't have fools and yeah, there was even one situation. She was in school, and she didn't agree with something that her teacher had said or was treating. I think it was one of her friends, and she thought that she was being treated really unfairly. And she said, "I'm not having this," and so she locked herself in the toilet in protest. she was about 8 at the time.
Oh my gosh, she's incredible.
And she locked herself in, and she was in there for the whole morning. She just refused to come out. As we were running school, so she thought that she said, when I'm running the school, Mum, things are going to be very different.
An anarchist.
Literally. So she did not come out. She said, I'm not coming out until justice is done for my friend.
Amazing.
And it's all in my book, which we'll come to later.
Yeah, do you want to tell us a bit about the book and maybe about the fund as well, and how the two coalesce? And
sure. So I'll tell you about the fund first.
Yes, please.
So we set up Rosie's Rainbow Fund, and because Rosie was very musical, we decided we were going to do music therapy. Music therapy is just a really powerful medium in which to reach very poorly children, or children with special needs even, or sort of children who can't express themselves, many of them, in any other way. And music reaches them in ways that you just cannot believe. It's just so powerful. So we implemented music therapy in John Radcliffe Hospital, where Rosie was a patient.
Oh, lovely.
And then extended it to Royal Berks at Reading, and also at Stoke Mandeville, where they've got a lot of children with spinal injuries who are there for a very long time. Mm. Music is just an extraordinary way for them to express themselves and empower them. It empowers them.
Absolutely.
And the other thing we did was to put in support for parents who've got very ill children. So whereas I had no support and I felt very isolated a lot of the time, now there's support in place, and we've got a wonderful lady who looks after the parents. So when the parents are really stressed, just like I was, she can get them away from the children's bed, take them for a lovely aromatherapy massage. They can offload.
Oh, wow.
She's like a listening ear. And they gain so much strength and can stay sane. And, you know, if parents can stay strong, then the children get better quicker.
Yeah.
They're better able to support and look after the children. So it's an amazing thing to be able to do.
Absolutely.
That's something that's not really talked about. I mean, we talk a lot about sort of grief, like once the death has happened and how it impacts families, but not so much like during an illness. And like, you know, that must be so difficult as a parent to be strong. And it's, I bet, especially as you said, your husband wasn't around. Especially because you said your husband was at home with your other child. I mean, that's really hard to kind of know. So in that moment, what would you have wanted? Would it have been just someone to talk to? Is that what you've created now?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we were really isolated. I mean, there were other parents there, but everyone was so wrapped up in their own own fear and their own child and their own stress that nobody really kind of talked to each other properly. I mean, we used to sort of pass the time of day in the kitchen and, you know, in the parents' kitchen and stuff, but everyone was so upset and so terrified most of the time that nobody really knew what to say. And I felt very alone. And there was one night just before Rosie had a big operation where they were trying to find out what was going on. She was going to be in theatre for a long time, for several hours. And I was absolutely beside myself and there was no family members around. And I locked myself in the loo, actually. And one of the nurses came out and she knocked on the door and she went, "Are you okay?" And I went, "Yeah, I'm absolutely fine." And of course, I was anything but fine.
Yeah.
And she said, "Come out and we'll have a chat." And I said, "No, because actually you need to look after the kids, because, you know, they're so rushed off their feet, these nurses. They're all amazing. And they look after the children, 24/7, and they haven't got time to spend with the parents.
No.
So, you know, it was something that was really badly needed. And now they don't have to suffer. Parents don't have to suffer like I did, really.
And I mean, that's why infrastructure like your charity is so important. And obviously, you know, the NHS do their best, but it, like you said, it's so underfunded and so they're so rushed off their feet. I mean, absolutely. And then, like, alongside, were you writing the book at the same time, or did that come after the fund? And how did that come about?
That came a long time after. So I'd always kind of written diaries ever since I was a kid, actually. I'd always kind of documented stuff. And fortunately, I documented all this stuff in some way in a sort of diary form. And then I started to write and write and write, really, when I was grieving, started to write a lot, because it was, for me, it was a helpful thing to do. And then many years later, I kind of looked at this pile of papers and all my friends and all lots of people who I'd kind of come into contact with through the charity said, "You know, you have got such a powerful story to tell. You really need to tell your story." And I had this pile of papers and I went, right, well, maybe I can turn this into a book. So I started to hone it into a book and I went, actually, my sister bought me an online writing course for Christmas and I went on this course and I managed to get into a book form. And then, of course, started to send it round to various publishers and got loads of rejections. I mean, loads. And eventually found a publisher, an amazing lady called Janet Whites of Alliance Publishing Press, and who is a small little boutique charity, a small boutique publishers. And she said, "I'd love to publish your book." And so we set to work. She said, "There's going to be a lot of work to do." So we spent months editing together and eventually ended up with what I think is a really great book. Well, I shouldn't say it's great myself.
No, you can say it's great. You're proud of it. It's important to, you know, trust in your own work. And also, it's something that's so personal. I don't think that, you know, it in a way could be bad. It's your experience and it's your truth. And I wonder, how did that, what was the experience of like of first, like, amassing all of the stories and writings you already had together, and then also going through the editing process, because I imagine that in itself is quite a...
It was really difficult.
Yeah,
of course,
tricky.
I hadn't even kind of said, but after Rosie's death and after setting up the charity, then I decided to have another baby, which I hadn't even touched on yet. And I was, like, 48, I think, at the time when decided... and then I went through a five year IVF journey.
Oh wow!
Absolute roller coaster, and And in the meantime, I'd been getting these, well, because I'm really into sort of spiritual stuff, and I've been getting all these messages that I think were from Rosie saying, come on, you can do this, you can do this. And 5 years down the line, I had a baby boy called Dominic, and he's and I was 54 at the time when I had him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what's so that just, what's that been like for you as a kind of, because that is, it is quite, it's quite, I hope this isn't rude, but it's quite late in the game.
Oh yeah, I know.
And what's that been like, having a baby much later?
Amazing, absolutely really? Amazing. And I don't regret one single second of it. He's now 16.
Amazing,
and he's wonderful. Yeah. And honestly, you know, some people probably said I was absolutely barking mad. Nobody I knew said that, but there were, you know, people who've sort of said that on. In magazine, you know, when I've written like magazine features or newspaper features and stuff like that, and there are sort of trolls on there, and they, you know, they're the first ones to go, oh, she's far too old, I think it's disgusting, and bloody blah. But you know, no one has the right to judge. And actually, it was a really positive experience for me, for my older daughter, because she had been so lonely. Although there's 20 years between them.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because Ellie was 14 when Rosie died, and then she was 20 when Dominic was born.
And what was it like having another child after having lost a child? Because I imagine going through that same, like, was there a lot more sort of anxiety and worry about things going wrong?
Yes and no, because I kind of knew it was going to be okay from all these signs and things I've been getting. And I just had a feeling it was all going to be okay. And yes, yeah, I do. I can't say I don't get anxious, because I do, you know, you kind of do jump to conclusions when the children get ill and stuff. But, you know, it was all been fine. It's been absolutely fine. He's a perfectly healthy, robust boy. A picture of health. Never had a moment's trouble, touch wood. He's 16. It could all start. You know, I've just never looked back, and he brought joy back into our house again. Oh. So although you don't ever get over losing a child, not ever, and I will never to my dying day ever stop missing my daughter, it just brought life back into my family and into my home, which had been so quiet. And because when Rosie had died, there was literally, like, there was nothing going on. It was my older daughter playing sad songs on the piano. And because she used to write music too, and there were no kids around, the toys had gone, and I just thought, I just can't bear it. I've got, and Dominic brought back all that kind of madness of having a child in the house, and the friends coming round, and the play dates, and the mess, and the Lego that you stand on, you know, and hurt feet, and all that stuff that you kind of curse at the time, but actually, it's just amazing. It's just life affirming.
So what you've done is obviously really, really incredible, and it's testament to kind of Rosie, and also like what we needed this change in sound, by the sounds of things, like in hospitals for the parents and the children that are going through it. What's next for you as like a mum and an author and an advocate for these grieving families?
So I published the book, and it's done really, really well actually, and I'm getting a lot of book talks off the back of it. I've just got an award actually, which was the People's Book Prize.
Oh, congratulations.
Which is a national prize. I was really proud. And it was for nonfiction. It was called the Beryl Bainbridge First Time Authors Award.
Oh, wow.
And I won that. So there's been a lot of sort of publicity and book talks and so on off the back of that. And I'm doing sort of literary festivals. I'm doing Henley Festival coming up. And I'll always go out and talk about my book to churches or anywhere, schools or businesses or anyone who kind of wants to know more. And I do a lot of those, and I just love doing those, and I sell my book and talk about the story, and I hope that it kind of brings some reassurance to parents or to anybody who's lost anybody, really, not only parents who've lost children, but anybody who's been through horrendous loss of any sort, that actually the future can be, you know, it can be rosy, and that there is joy to be found even in the worst possible, even if, you know, if it's the worst possible scenario and you never think you're going to live through it, which at the time I just didn't. I never thought I could get through it, but I did. And obviously you go on grieving, and I, you know, I still have my days, I can assure you, but But, you know, but it's been a really positive experience. And actually, I like to know that I'm helping people.
Well, you are. And yeah, thank you so, so, so much for sharing Rosie and sharing your story.
I definitely want to read the book.
Yeah,
as well,
I'm excited about it. I was just going to say that. Yeah, let's totally get.
Please read the book.
Share a copy.
And the books, you can get the book on Amazon, or you can order through Waterstones or
amazing.
Wherever. Or if you write to me via the my carolynmailing.com website, I can sign a copy with pleasure.
Oh, and, bless
you. Anything like that. So yeah, but it's an important read, and yeah, people should read it.
And where can we find you apart from your, do you have any social media, or is your website the best place?
I've got a Facebook page, Carolyn Mailing Author.
Amazing.
You can find me via Rose's Rainbow Fund. Look up the charity, because it's, you know, we do really good works and we need support at the moment. Small charities are really kind of struggling a bit. But we do lots and lots of good work. So do look up rosesrainbowfund.co.uk, because there's a lot of good stuff on there. I've got an Instagram page as well, Carolyn Mailing Author. I'm easy to find, or just go online, you'll find me.
Perfect. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have to go to a break before we finish the show. But thank you so much.
Have a lovely day.
Bye.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
FUBAR Radio. Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register to vote.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah. So it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real.
This is not real.
This is not real. I'm not playing into this.
Yeah.
You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio. Becky Briggs and Natasha
Spencer-Levy. Welcome back to Death Funny Business. We've got about 6 minutes left to just...
She's going
to
be specific about it. What a lovely lady. Carolyn is such an inspiration. So nice. And like, what a beautiful thing to do to kind of keep your daughter's memory alive. And I love that thing about the rainbow.
Yeah, me too.
Like,
that was
how
really
lovely
sweet.
Is it, like, signs. You know, at her celebration, and there she is in the sky. It's lovely.
Are you going to write a book?
I'm writing a play at the moment.
Are you?
Yeah. Shouldn't be telling people that. It's bad for the evil eye.
Is it about death?
No, I can't tell you what it's about. It's really boring. Well, no, I can tell you what it's about. It's about...
I'll give you some feedback.
Right now?
Yeah.
I've literally written like 8 pages.
I'll give you some feedback on what it's about.
No, because I can't, because I can't give it away, because if I say it now, it sounds really boring, but there's like, you know, bits to it that make a lot more sense. Anyway, this is against the point. I was actually talking about this today, about being creative and like, oh shit, and like writing things and everything. Mm. And I remember when I was in my first year at drama school, and I was like, right, you know, I've got a lot of content to talk about. You know, I got shit. I'm funny. You know, let's write something hilarious. Like, I've got all the material.
Quirks,
do you know what I mean?
Trauma. Yeah.
And I remember someone saying to me like, oh, you should watch Fleabag. Like, that's
so good,
right? But you know, I sit down, I watch this fucking show, and I go, well, there it is. That's what I wanted to write.
Oh, you feel like it's really been done.
I'm sorry. You're telling me that Tabby is not Claire.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Is that not so accurate? Like, wonderfully lovely, but also so stern. Yeah. It's the eyebrows. It's the, are you wearing my top? Like that. Like, and also like the drinking.
I never thought of that.
Fleabag getting into absolute shenanigans, and like, she would 100% go home and have a bath with a boy.
But she'd probably do more.
This
than
is
that.
What I'm saying. Look, don't get me wrong, okay. But point being is, I was like, God damn it! So I didn't write for a really long time. But then my friend Beth, my very good friend Beth, she's been encouraging me to write, and I really love her for that. Because
you should write.
Why not? Just write anything. You write lots of music.
I do write.
I feel like you
music.
Haven't been writing like your classic Becky Briggs numbers.
No, I've moved on.
She's moved on to
I'm
like
on the big dance
she's
stage
like,
now.
She's like coke and cigarettes and singing and boys. You know, it's like brat.
Actually, it's so brat. It's like I should write.
But
a song
Becky used when we were kids. Becky
Double G and T.
Oh,
I haven't, but I should.
Yeah, you should. Becky used to write these like very serious love songs.
Oh, I was 12 years old.
Yeah, I know, but it used to be your thing, like,
oh,
Becky
God.
And that guitar. You were attached to that guitar. That guitar, like, literally was glued to your body.
Well, yeah, I think so. And I just did a lot of writing. I only knew about 3 chords. And I was like, yeah. I remember I could feel, like, everything. I was like, C, D, and I was like, well, is this going to be about? And then I would write something.
It's been a very...
But I wouldn't know what I was actually writing about. And then now when I listen back to those songs, I'm thinking, fucking hell, did you actually think you were in love? What are you talking about?
Oh, poor thing.
There's a lot going on there, though.
There is a lot going on there.
Really strange. But that was my way of, that was therapy. Like, I did definitely
were
feel
you
like
writing,
that was
like,
there.
Love songs in primary school, though?
Year seven.
It was when we got to secondary.
Secondary school.
That we were, like,
I fell in love with someone on the bus.
Did you?
And then...
Who was it? Do I know them? Because they've always...
I don't think you would. I fell in love with a lot of boys.
Yeah, I mean, you were, like, in prime territory to do that.
Yeah.
I had the pick of two.
I wouldn't say that was the reason.
No, but I went to a girls' school.
Yeah, no, I know.
And then I went to a co-ed, and there were 16 of us.
I just love boys.
Yeah, who doesn't?
He doesn't.
falling in love is fun. That is a bit of you, though, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's so
You're like a bit of a romantic, I think.
I am a romantic. Definitely not as much anymore. A bit more realistic now.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Writing a book, I was thinking about this the other day.
You could totally write a book.
No, I would.
Oh.
Because.
I was like,
there's so much. Like, I would love to be able to write, like, a Death of Funny Business book. Like, that would be cool, right? Oh. Like,
well, we'd write that together.
Yes, together.
Right.
No, okay, I'm going to write on my own.
I thought you were suggesting that, like, you were going to go off and,
you can,
like,
write the blurb.
I'll just be there hanging out.
Your picture can be on the back still.
Okay.
I'll just make sure mine's bigger than yours.
Do you know, Becky, this is really making me feel really great about myself
now.
That's
all right. That's all right.
I'm glad.
It would be quite fun to write, you know, about a collection of ideas and thoughts and opinions of everyone that we've had in the studio.
I mean, 100%.
But putting that on paper.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Just
I would really struggle to collate those ideas and put that on paper.
Babe, so. We literally have it all audio recorded. It would literally be absolutely fine. I could do that in like a year.
A year?
Yeah, we could do that in a year. I'm not even kidding.
Death of Funny Business, the book.
Well, on that note, ladies and gents and friends and folks, we're wrapping up now. I hope you have a lovely week.
I really hope. And I'm Becky, I hope awake next week. I'm so sorry, guys.
No, don't apologise. Also, again,
this
don't
is real. I'm not pretending on this show.
All right, fucking hell.
So this is a little message to finish off the show. Be yourself. Don't be anyone else. Yep. If you're tired, you don't have to put on a front.
No, yeah, fair enough.
You can't choose what you do. 100%. You can. But I wanted to be at home and I wanted to rot in my bed this evening.
Well,
but I didn't, because I knew that I needed to come on here, Death of Funny Business,
have at 5 p.m. 5 p.m.
on a Tuesday with Natasha Spencer Levy, and have a little bit of a laugh.
Yeah, and talk about
and talk about some really lovely, sad stuff and lovely people.
But lovely people making the best of hard situations. 100%. And on that note, friends, it's time
family,
to go. Sleep well. Bye bye. Food Bar Radio.